Okay, good morning. Just a little bit. Good morning, Gutavach. Today we're up to Perek Yud Aleph here in the Tiferes Yisrael. And he's going to be continuing to respond to the question which was posed, which he posed to himself in the beginning of Perek Yud. The question which he posed in the beginning of Perek Yud, here as we're studying the quality of Torah, was the question or the challenge of the philosophim, of the philosophers, who saw, studying the arcane details of halacha, so to speak, as being far less conducive to producing the lofty, great personality and the lofty, great connection to Hashem, that studying something more abstract and philosophical, something more of the scientific higher realms and spheres, you know, looking at the stars and the solar systems and who knows what, to study Shor Shenogach Es Hapora, how what happens when an ox scores a cow, or to study the details of ovens and stoves and divisions, when you know, and so on and so forth, all kinds of practical, mundane matters, might seems to be an unlikely way, in their view, of being able to come to connection to Hashem. That was the question which he posed at the beginning of Perek Yud. And what we saw last week in what he discussed was that he said, remember that the study of Torah is valuable in the sense of it creating some kind of a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The whole practice of Torah was somehow manipulating the Siddurim, the aspects of this world in a way that are able to cultivate the connection to Hashem, the Seder which Hashem established. And he first says, well, so now we look at the six orders of the Mishnah, the Shas, which is our classic curriculum, and he divided it up into three parts, Zroim and Moe, discussing the heavens, the earth and the heavens, right, the earth and Zroim, obviously the agricultural laws, Moe discussing the heavens because the times, the seasons, the festivals are determined by the movement of the celestial bodies. Noshim and Ezekiel were about interpersonal relationships between people, not just matters of the physical world, the earth and the heavens, but between people, right? Noshim, the male-female relationships, Nezikin would usually be more the male-male relationships, the commercial relationships, and then Kochim and Taros, which is a discussion of the higher spheres, right? The human being is the bridge between the lower and the higher, and Kochim is that much more in the higher spheres, Kochim and Taros, and he distinguished between Kochim and Taros, Chachma and Das, something which we left aside last time and this time as well. But then, the latter part, so again, these are all the teachings of Hashem about how to manage these various spheres of the world, and that, he said, would be a way to connect to Hashem. Beyond that, he continued on with the Gemara, where the Gemara analyzes that pasuk, which brings us the six Siddurim, which alludes to the six Siddurim, Emunas Itecha, that says, Yiras Hashem Hiyotzare, the fear of God is that which will store, that which will preserve the Torah. And as we discussed last time, as he explained, the idea is because given that the pursuit of Torah is the pursuit of connection to Hashem, the strongest connection to Hashem that a person has is Yiras Shamayim, fear of heaven. Meaning, not fear of punishment, but the recognition of complete dependence, that the person is the olul, to Hashem's olah, he is the effect to Hashem's cause. You can love Hashem, right, but you know, you can love anybody, you can love all kinds of things, that doesn't give you a sense of absolute connection, because love is a voluntary act, it's something which you choose, I admire, I love. On the other hand, yira ilah, the highest yira, is the person where they realize that they can't do without them. Right? I'm completely dependent. I can't do without them. That's a far deeper, a far more significant connection. As we said last time, just giving some illustrations, right? You can have a partner in your business. You get together, you go together in business because you like each other, because you share goals, because you think you complement each other, techniques, who knows what. Right? So you join together in a partnership. At any time, you can decide to end the partnership. Right? I liked working with you. It was nice. Now it's nice to know you. How about the bank that you borrowed the money from to start up the business? You may not like them so much. Right? It's not a matter of like. But the point is, you can't just say, you know what? I really appreciate the loan, but let's forget about it now. You can't do that, right? They lent you the money. You're dependent on them. Yira is the recognition of our absolute dependence on Hashem. And therefore, since Torah is about forging the truest connection, Yira is an essential ingredient for someone who's going to develop a real connection to Hashem through Torah. They have to show how indeed connected, a connectedness which is unbreakable connectedness, which is a connectedness connected to beholdenness, that's there for the person. That's what we saw last week as the first couple of components. But he's not finished. Yeah.
Don't we mistranslate Yira? I mean, since we thought that Yira is fear of hate, that punishment, but I mean, Rabbi Weinberg, I think, said
right.
You're blown away. You realize where you are in relation to what Rabbi Shlomo does.
Right. Fear is an easier translation for Yiras Ha'einesh, fear of punishment, or a person being afraid to do a sin. But when a person goes in, the example a feeling of utter dependence, you know, it doesn't mean, oh, and I'm therefore afraid he's going to pull the plug. Even if you're not afraid of that per se for the moment, but just realizing, you know, the power, the relative power is it. Yes, or reverence are good terms for Yira. Okay, so, but he says, you know, maybe we still don't understand exactly why it's Shor Shenogach Es Hapara. Why it's this. And so, he uses this next perek to talk about it. And really what this becomes is not just a contrast between why are we studying Torah, Shor Shenogach Es Hapara, instead of studying deeper philosophical, theological studies, but rather studying Torah versus studying anything of a secular discipline, anything which is a study other than Torah, whether you're studying the stars, the solar systems, whether you're studying anything else, any other realm of chachma, of wisdom. You know, theology is probably not the right term to use, right? Theology would be trying to study Hashem himself, right? Which was not even what the philosophers were necessarily in this version, what they were advancing. Right? The Rambam speaks about the knowledge of Hashem himself, which what the Maral is going to speak to here is not going to address. Right? But talking about the study of the Kechavim and the Galgalim, the stars and the constellations and so on and so forth, and understanding the basic elements of the world, which one would be greater. And this is going to be a contrast between the two of them. And he says, let's understand as our intro, again, which is what we've really been discussing, is that the Hatzlocha, the level a person reaches, is not by how smart he is, how much wisdom he has. If that was the definition of Hatzlocha, of the success that a person is trying to achieve, then perhaps I can understand what the philosophers would be arguing. The definition of success is a single definition, which is Dveikus Bayisbarach. The greater the attachment the person establishes with Hashem, the greater success they are, we are as human beings. So yes, we have to figure out what it takes to get there. What does it take to establish Dveikus with Hashem? Right? But if you start with an assumption that the more you know, the better you are, then you can understand. Maybe there are more things to know, or so to speak, bigger things to know in the celestial spheres than there are in the traffic laws between cows and bulls. But on the other hand, if the definition is which creates a greater to attachment to Hashem, so now let's examine the premises about what is in the realm of wisdom, in the realm of study, what's going to establish the greater connection to Hashem. Okay. So the Maral is going to formulate two basic approaches to this. that contrast the study of Torah with the study of Chachmas Chitzanias, of other realms of wisdom, of study in the world. And they're not completely discrete from each other, but there are two different levels, two different pieces, which he, way he formulates them. And the first one sort of has an A and a B. I'll tell you quickly what the two of them are, and then we will try to look at them in greater detail. He says, you want to pick if Chachma is valuable to the extent that it establishes a connection to Hashem. So you want to study the Chachma that is in itself most godly, most connected to Hashem. And so he says, Torah becomes the ultimate pursuit. Why? First logic is because Torah is yosher. Yoshar. Okay, the term yoshar is straight. Yosher is right, a justice, a certain clear justice. And he says, Torah is yosher. And, again, I'm just giving you the outline here. We're going to discuss this more as we go along. And there is nothing that is more precious and connected to Hashem than that which is yashar, that which is upright, that which is straight. And therefore, if you want to study the Torah, if you want, attach a relationship with Hashem, so then connect through the medium of yashrus. Connect through the medium of seeing that which it is, the way it is, you know, in that straight and clear way. That's the content of Torah. The second approach, which the Maharal says, the second piece to the approach which the Maharal says is that when you're studying with the other things, you're studying the things that the objects that Hashem created. Whereas when you're studying Torah, you're studying Hashem's word. And when you're studying Hashem's word, that's much more of a direct study of Hashem than studying Hashem's handiwork. Studying anything that exists in the universe other than Torah is studying Hashem's handiwork. Studying the Torah is studying Hashem's word. Okay? So those are the two basic approaches which he has. And let's now try to expand upon them, elaborate upon them. Yosha. So, the presentation of Yosher that I'm going to make here is, I'm trying to sort of pull apart a little bit what the Maharal says and divide it to some degree into two parts. There is a very Maharalian part, and then there is a much more universal kind of part. What I mean by Maharalian part is that there's, you know, expressed in terms of, you know, his kind of description of physical structures and how they could connect to Hashem, numbers and how they connect to spirituality. But there's also an essential part. And the essential part is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the God who is just and who is true. And from the Torah we learn justice and truth. We learn what's always the absolute right thing to do. With always absolute, the true thing to do, to apply to the world that exists, right? In a world which exists, whether you're living in a desert where the most complex transaction you're going to be involved in is manufacturing hourglasses, right? You know, or whether you're involved in a very, you know, credit default swaps. Right, or end of life decisions, or who knows what else you're involved in. It doesn't matter the sophistication or the simplicity of what it is that you're involved in the world. There's always going to be a need to apply emes, true, proper behavior to that which you are involved in. And that's what the Torah teaches you how to do. When we try to be godly, which is our fundamental charge as human beings. We are created b'tzelem Elohim, in the divine image, to be godly. So we need to be able to simulate the yashrus, the truth, the appropriateness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, since the Torah is that which gives us that, the way to apply true and just principles to the world which we occupy. So of course that becomes the means of connecting to Hashem Yisbarach. Now the Maharalian terms are a little bit beyond this, and he explains as follows. Yashar means something which is straight, as opposed to something which is sort of imbalanced or subject to extremes. In the world of the Maharal, we've learned many times over the years, those who have been with us longer, that we have two forms, so to speak, of one, of unity. In the world of numbers, there's really more than two, but we'll start to what we're going to deal for our purposes today, the basic two. There's one. One is a single, undivided, indivisible, essential whole. Like HaKadosh Baruch, we speak of him being Hashem Echad. Two is, by definition, a split. In the physical world, we're dealing always with things which split. Hashem is Echad. You can't divide Hashem, this part of Hashem or that part of Hashem. Hashem is a single, internally consistent whole. Physical world, this part of the table, is separate from that part of the table. Everything in the physical world is subject to division. When we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Hamokom, for instance, Hashem is the place. What's the idea? Everything in the world exists within a place, which means that this thing exists in this place, that doesn't mean that place. I can't be in Baltimore and in New York at the same time, right? They're two separate places. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Hamakim, he is the place. He is Mekom HaShalom. The world, so to speak, exists within him. What does that mean? That there's no such thing as confining Hashem to a specific place. He can't be here and not there. Hashem's unity transcends all of that. Parenthetically, less famous, but equally accurate, is another name of Hashem, which is Hazman. Now, we don't call Hashem Hazman. You never heard that name. Right? But what is the name of Hashem that we know, that we never pronounce? Is the name Hoya Hoveh V'Yeh, the name which is a composite of He was, He is, He will be. The Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, the name that we don't pronounce, is bringing together was, is, and will be, which means that Hashem is not confined to a certain time. He doesn't exist at a certain time. Right? For Him, time is within Him. He transcends time. That's, of course, we're not going to discuss that. That's the ultimate answer to that question of Yediyahu Bechira, is that, foreknowledge and free choice, right? It's not like Hashem knows now what's going to happen later. Hashem doesn't exist now versus later, just like He doesn't exist here versus there, right? There's the way we divide our world as to something being here and not there, or now and not later, right? These various dimensions that limit, that divide, don't exist with Hashem Yisbarach, with the ultimate unity. But in the world where Hashem, in the very first pasuk, Bereishis, Bara Elokim, Es Hashamayim, Es Haaretz, in the beginning, which is understood in that word as the creation of time, of the beginning of time. And Hashem created the heaven and the earth, which is the creation of space. That is the creation which begins with the letter Beis, 2. Because now you have, in a physical world, you have something called division. That's the way it works. Now, what happens when you try to bring Hashem's presence to the physical world? It's a world of two. It's a world of division. It's not a world of ultimate unity. Yes, when Hashem came and spoke to the Jewish people at Har Sinai, He started with an aleph. He said, Anoichi Hashem, I am Hashem your God. That starts with an aleph. Hashem, as He is one. But in our world, we are the world of two, so how do we somehow bring it together? So here we have the second level of Echad, the second level of unity, which is called three. In the Maharal's understanding, that's called three. The three. Why? Because when you have two, you have one over here, and you have one over there, and they're divided. The three, the third, is the bridge that somehow allows two things that by themselves would be separate to be joined together. V'chein shnei ksuvim hamachishim ze eze ad shiyavoy hakosuv ha-shlishi v'yachriya b'neihem. Right, that line which we say in the 13 hermeneutic principles of Rabbi Shmuel, which is a nice fancy word that nobody knows exactly what it means, right? But it was made up by a fellow named Herman. So the 13 hermeneutic principles, right? The last one is you have two verses in the Torah that contradict one another. You look for the third one that will somehow harmonize them or somehow balance the two of them. Three is the possibility of balancing the two. The classic example of that is Yaakov Avinu. We have Avram Avinu on an extreme called Chesed. Beautiful. Mida, a characteristic that's gold, Chesed. Yitzchak Avinu, a Mida called Yira, called fear, reverence, restraint, Gvura. Right? Another fantastically important Mida. Each one has its world of its extreme. Chesed is not Yira, Yira is not Chesed. The two, in a certain sense, contradict each other. Comes along the third Av, Yaakov Avinu, and he's Emes. He somehow is the blend between the Chesed of Avram and the Yira of Yitzchak, applying each value exactly the way it's supposed to be applied, so that comes out as Emes. Avram Avinu, with his extreme of Chesed, wasn't perfect. Witness the fact, as this is what I'm saying over you to is a Gemara, it's not a thing, Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Mevav Amebeis, and the Gemara says that Avram Avinu wasn't perfect. You see, he had a child Yishmael. Yitzchak wasn't perfect. He had a child Esav. Yaakov Avinu had 12 children that all remained part of the Jewish people. Vitasei Shleima. Because Yaakov was Emes. Because he was the third. He took a little bit of this and a little bit of that. He put all together exactly what needed, and that was the harmony. And Yaakov Avinu is seen to be, you know, the image that's on the Kisei HaKavod, the one who's so connected to Hashem, right? Ata Echad v'Shimcha Echad, right? Is in a certain sense Yaakov Avinu. The word Echad is Aleph. I'm just bringing you just hints, you know, Aleph Ches Dalet, right? What's Aleph Ches Dalet? Yaakov, 8 sons from wives. 4 sons from shvachas, from concubines. Together they compose the echad, the unity of the Jewish people. Right? Now, that's Yaakov Avinu. He's somehow bridging it, bringing it together, making the disparate able to become one. Yes?
2 quick questions. Now that you're mentioning echad, is it possible that echad is also Aleph, Chesed, and Din?
Never heard of that. Beautiful. Interesting. Yeah? Okay.
Is Emes a separate characteristic and quality that's freestanding, independent of love and Yira, or is it simply the perfect blend of Ava and Yira?
I think it can be seen both ways. I think there is some, you know, an Emes that we can talk about that somehow is beyond Midos. It's beyond Midos. It's a certain objectivity, Emes. Where Chesed is not objective and Din is not objective, those are very subjective characteristics. Emes is objectivity. But on the other hand, one achieves Emes, one achieves that, and the it's going to be a result of perfect application of Chesed, perfect application of Din. So Yaakov is known really by 2 characteristics. One is called Emes, right, which sort of implies this objective perfection, and the other one is Tiferes. Tiferes, which we translate, you know, feebly as glory, you know, but Tiferes is understood as the harmony, the bringing together of the two polar opposites of the past. So that's the three of one. In other words, come to this world of disparate components, of polar opposites, of things that struggle against each other, things that are separate from each other, and try to bring them together. The one who brings them together is the third. In halacha, when it speaks about 2 people, right, who are working with each other and they have a struggle with each other, or they have to, there's issues perhaps of, you know, chves, you know, you owe me the money for the thing and I owe you the merchandise, and what are we going to do? So we find what we call in English a third party. In Lashon Kodesh, in Mishnah language, is a shalish, right? The third party enables these two who are not necessarily working well together, not necessarily trusting each other, to be able to get there. That's the role of a third, is to bring together the others. right? The mezumen, you know, brings together the two by themselves will be considered two by themselves. When there's a third, now we're a group. Nevarech she'achalnu mishaloi. Now we can do it together. Okay, so that's the numbers of it. That's sort of the numerology of it. So it brings the Maral, a beautiful Gemara, classic Gemara. Gemara, which is part of the Agarata that's going to occupy many prakim later in the Tiferes Yisrael. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos and Perek Rabbi Akiva and Daf Peches, which talks about Matan Torah. That's the Agarata of the giving of the Torah. And the Gemara says over there, Dar Shahug Lila Aleid Rav Chisda. A certain Galilean darshaned above Rav Chisda. Right? What that means in front of Rav Chisda. Brich Rachmana, the Yohivlon. Blessed is Hashem who gave us. Okay, ready? Uriyan Klisoi. A triple Torah. Torah has three parts. Torah, Neviim, Uksuvim. Now, by the way, enlightened by the Maharal from last week, we understand that even the Mishnah, which is six orders, is also Tlisa. It's also three realms, right? Remember? Physical matter, heaven and earth. People, women and men, Noshim Nezikin. And holiness, pure holiness, Kachim and Taris. Right? It's three. La'am Tlisoi. To a tripled nation. What is that? Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim. Al Yidei Tlisoi. Through a third. Who's the third? Moshe Rabbeinu, the third born son after Aaron and Miriam. B'yom Tlisoi, on a triple day. What's Yom Tlisoi? So the thing is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu originally said to Moshe Rabbeinu, they should be prepared for the third day. Right? In other words, whatever it was, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they arrived, the second Nisan he went up. Let them prepare on the third day I'm going to give them the Torah. Now, it wasn't the third day of any month. Right? We don't even refer to Shavuos as being a day of a month, really, right? We're not even sure whether originally the Torah was given on the 6th of Sivan or the 7th of Sivan. We know it was 50 days after Yetzias Mitzrayim, but that's all, right? But the third day is from Hashem said, okay, now start the clock on the third day, and be Yarchat Lisa, on the third month, Nisan Iyar Sivan. Right? So now that's cute. Right? Blessed is Hashem who gave us this three and that three and that three and then, right? Five threes. Says the Maral, now you understand. You understand that this is not just a cute thing, everything is threes. Because that's the idea. It's the bringing together of the tzavos. It's bringing Torah to the physical world. So the number three is a magic number. Is the magic number of what the Torah is supposed to do to apply to it, to each one. And Maral goes through with more of an arichus, you know, on some of these, you know, the specific details. But when he says, Am Tlisoi, right, a triple nation, he says that Yaakov, who was the third of the Avos, right, what do we say? Karasa Shemai Yisrael V'Yeshurun. We call the name Yeshurun. Yeshurun is from the term Yashar. Right? Arguably, Yisrael is also from the term Yashar. But that's not the way the term is described in the Torah. Sarisa, it's described more as term of Sar, prince. Right? But even there, we understand the Ramban explains that it comes from the term Yashar. It's a contrast to the name Yaakov, which means curvy, twisted, right? Vayakfeni zepamayim. The Navi Ramban cites the pasuk in Yeshaya where it says the promise of Laasid Lavai includes Vehoya Heokov Lemishar. That which was crooked will become straight. Simply in context, the pasuk is saying that the curvy roads will all be made straight. The bumpy roads will all be made smooth. You know, this picture of being able to travel to Eretz Yisrael by setting it on cruise control and autopilot. You know, just hold the steering wheel in your legs and learn Daf Yomi. You know, just go straight. You know, that kind of a thing. Or answer emails on your BlackBerry. Right? But The idea is that so even the name Yisrael is connected to Yashar. That which he had to do twisted, ultimately he'll be able to do straight. But the name Yeshurun, which is going to be appearing more, you know, in Hazinu, right, is this because of this Yashrus. Yashrus is the opposite of the extremes of the two. The three makes it into something not to one, to the other, but able to be rather on the straight path. Ho Elokim osa es ha'adam yashar vehema bikshu cheshbeinez rabim. The verse says, could you maybe turn down the temperature on that to a little bit more? It's to like 60 or something. There's a dial in there. Let's see.
It's like a fan too?
There might be a fan speed also you can make higher. Don't put it in the middle. Make it extreme, please. Cooler is like 60. It'll go to lower temperature, to 60 or something, and then and then high fan speed. Okay. So I lost my train of thought there. So the term Yeshurun, as opposed to, the things which occupy the extremes. Yeah, so Elohim asa Adam Yashar, that's what I was saying. God made man Yashar. So that's the description. That verse says in a nutshell, when Hashem originally made man before the sin, he was Yashar. But then he sought Cheshbonos Rabim, then he sought many calculations, complications. By eating from the tree of knowledge, so then what happened was that he created a complete division that exists between the person, a schism within the person's personality between what the physical wants and what the spiritual wants. Originally, the human being was harmonized between the physical and the spiritual. Now, he went after the physical, forgetting about the spiritual, ignoring Hashem's command. It's all this part of Yashrus's harmony. Yashrus's getting everything to be able to work together. And Yashrus, the way we use it. Right? So again, excuse me, let me just bring some more of his asides. Okay, so that's Kol Yisrael, the Yashar. Yaakov spawned the nation. By the time he came to Yaakov, he could have the 12 Shvatim. Avram couldn't spawn the whole nation. Just Yaakov could, because he had this Yashar. Moshe Rabbeinu is Yashar. How do you see Moshe Rabbeinu is Yashar? That's exactly what he does from the moment he grows up and goes out is... he's demanding Yashrus. He's demanding justice. Why are you hitting this Jew, right? And so on and so forth. You know, why are you fighting with each other, even with not a Jew, right? The daughters of Yisro, Goyim, right? He goes, what are you doing, chasing them away, right? He stands up to defend them. Moshe Rabbeinu stands for justice. That's his way. Even the third month, right? What's the idea? Sivan is going to be, as he said, the zman is b'shivui ma'id. L'yotzachutz l'katza b'shum davar v'zei yadua. He says, the time, the seasons there are quite balanced in Sivan. Now, Rabbi Hartman points out that, well, you know, if you recall, when we learned in the Netzach Yisrael, we saw that he spoke about it actually being Nisan and Tishrei, because those are the seasons of the equinox, right, when the days are perfectly balanced. But it's still, it's still not quite beyond. So it's a little bit, you know, he ends with a tzarech yun, you know, how the morale does this over there. But you need this again at that time, and again the third day. Says the Maral, by definition, studying the Torah is studying Yashar. Studying anything in the physical world is not, because the physical world is the world of Beis, the world which indeed, you know, defies that notion of Yashar, of perfect balance, of that which is straight. When we speak about Yashar, by the way, we speak about the same thing. Our institution for Yashrus is supposed to be the judge, right? The Beis Din. By the way, what's the minimum number of a Beis Din? Three. What's the person supposed to do when they sit in judgment? Is that they're supposed to see. The Mishnah says, view both of them when they come before you as guilty. When they leave, view both of them as innocent. So the Maral explains in the Derech HaChaim, in Pirkei Avos, explains what's the idea. Because the judge has to sit squarely between the two extremes, between the two litigants who are there. Always. That's the whole role of judgment. The reason why you go to a judge is because, if you're honest, you understand, when I'm advocating for something for me, I just have one extreme on this case, my extreme. And my defendant or my co-litigant, whatever the right word is, the one who I'm arguing with, what would be the word, counsel? My opponent.
That's adversary.
Adversary, opponent. That says it better than anything, right? Adversary, opponent. He's the opposite, right? He's representing the opposite extreme. I can't see Yashar because I'm sitting over here. You can't see Yashar because you're sitting over there. That's the reason why, as we learned in yesterday's parsha, you can't even take Sheikhad, you can't even, so to speak, take a bribe to the truth. Right? The guy says, you know, I know this guy's threatening you, right? So you're going to want to judge on his thing. If you judge the truth the way you see it, don't worry, I'm going to pay you everything he would pay you. And he's just paying you to judge the truth. You're not going to profit. You can't. Why? Because, says Maral, and Rafudra has Mamorim explains, he says that because when he gives you Shochad, that means he has pulled you to his side. Pulled you to his side. And the judge has to be squarely in the middle. Yashar is squarely in the middle. And that's, you know, now this is a Midah which obviously, right, one does not have to be brilliant or prophetic, right, to understand that this is a Midah that we as the Jewish people have to work on very, very intensely at this point in time. On Yashrus. Right? And the first thing to understand is that if it's for you, you're not a good judge of Yashrus. Anything which is going to be for you, you got to really wonder, you got to really doubt. You got to be very, very careful if it's for you. If what you're doing is you're fighting the battle of truth, you know, for some objective great goal which is not for you, okay, I trust your judgment a lot more because you're not an extreme.
Is this why Bhakti didn't like Chaur more than Din? The principle?
Wait, can I ask why? What's underlying the question?
Underlying Chaur is you bring the two sides together, it's compromise. You always shoot for that versus, you know, winners and losers, Din.
What is it that Rabbi Howard said that you're saying suggests
harmony.
So the truth is that it's not Batei Din. There are, I guess you could take the question in two parts. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that Aaron HaKohen used to try to head off Din. Moshe Rabbeinu was Din. He was that unbiased person in the middle who would say what the Derech HaYosher is. But what happens is necessarily that in that case there are winners and losers, which means that it doesn't create perfect harmony unless they're really, really, really mekabel the din. Unless they really accept the judgment, which is what the Mishnah says, when they end, they should both be innocent in your eyes, because shekibu aleim es hadin. And they say, look, I don't want it if it's not mine. But you know, that's like saying die on ha'emes, where you accept the divine judgment, where there's still, you know, some pangs in there. So Aaron HaKohen used to try to beat Moshe Rabbeinu to it. And, you know, he had, like, he cased out the joint, the bezin. Before the people would walk into the din, he would try to make a pshar between them, which is the way of shalom, the way of unifying through that method, which in a sense is that, you know, is that thing. And to some degree, we try to do the same thing. There's a second major motivator, which is that we say the mandate of a bezin today is called pshar akreiv ledin, which means it's a compromise that approaches judgment. Because to be able to stand and say, we are going to give you absolute judgment, requires a level of knowledge and authority that we are not, authority where we're sure we don't have, and knowledge that we're not confident that we have. So therefore we say, look, you've got to sign up for us trying to give it our best shot. Now, it's not true. It's not true in my experience that a bezdin just tries to make a pshara. It's not true. In other words, they will, you know, people will come in for a case, they'll say, could you guys maybe work this out? Would you like to have a few minutes in the hall? Maybe one of us can help you, you know, like talk this over or something like that. And maybe at different points where they see that, you know, after all the arguments, maybe there's like a window that we can do this, they'll also try to see if the people can come to mutual agreement. But when the bezdin paskins, they don't paskin pshara, compromise for the sake of compromise. You know, you know, really we think this guy is right, but we don't want this guy to walk out with nothing, so therefore they don't do that, right? They pass in the way they see it as being right, but they say, you know, we're doing the best we can. That's Pshara Kreva Ladin. It's not true. Many times I find people think that they're going to go to Beis Din, and even if they're 100% right, you know, and the guy owes them $40,000 because he's, you know, he stole from them or he reneged or whatever it is, but necessarily they're for sure not going to get $40,000 because the Beis Din passed is Pshara. It's not true. That's not true. The Beis Din might attempt to help them make a Pshara, but if it comes down to it and they ask it, the job of the Beis Din is to call it the way they see it. Okay. Now. So that's that, and that's Yosher, and that connects to Hashem. I mentioned, I think Shabbat Chazon. You know what the Chinuch says, where he talks about truth, right? Which Torah is truth, so it's truth, and he writes about how fundamentally important truth is and how horrible falsehood is. But he says there. He says, with truth comes bracha, and with falsehood and deceit comes curse. Why? It's pashut. Because Hashem is emes v'yosher. Hashem is true and straight. And if you want to be connected to Hashem, you have to be emes v'yosher. And bracha only comes from connection to Hashem. This is the Sefer HaChinuch writes in Parshas Mishpatim. Right? It's this is what the Maharal is speaking about over here. It's not knowledge that makes us close to Hashem. Oh, Hashem knows everything, and now, or Hashem's omniscient, right? He knows everything. And now that I'm Mr. Know-It-All, I must be close to Hashem. Knowledge is nothing. Knowledge applied as emes, as being able to do that which is true and right and proper, that is godly. That's the aspect of divine knowledge that we are expected to emulate, to try to be able to have to come close to Hashem. So he says, you want to study the world of Yashar. That's reason number one. That's Torah versus Chachmas Chitzonis. Reason number two. Are you ready? Okay. Mm-hmm. Reason number two is, as we mentioned before in the beginning, is that one of them is studying the creations of Hashem. And the second is studying Hashem itself. It says knowledge is significant, as you would understand, even in terms of the philosophers, knowledge is going to be significant to the extent that there's significance to what the person has the knowledge of. Right? Right? The more significant the thing that you know, the more significant the fact that you have that knowledge. So what's the most significant knowledge? Something which Hashem, knowledge of something which Hashem created, or so to speak, knowledge of Hashem's ways itself, Darkei Hashem, as opposed to Pu'ulos Hashem, as opposed to the actions of Hashem. It says when a person studies Shor Shanavi Chesapor, they're not learning about cows and bulls. If they study biology, they're learning about cows and bulls. If they study Shor Shanavi Chesapor, they're learning about the truth applied to a situation when a cow hits a bull. They're studying about the truth. They're studying about the word of Hashem. What would be the word of Hashem in this instance? And that's so much more intimate and direct with Hashem than the study of the creatures itself. Maral doesn't bring this here, but I saw Rabbi Hartman, the footnote, does. What this really begs is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, a Pesek Mishnasai, person who's in the middle of learning and interrupts and says, wow, how beautiful is Ilan Zeh or Nir Zeh, how beautiful is this tree or this field, right? It's Mischayev B'Nafshay, sort of like guilty for his life. Terrible thing, right? And as the Bartanura says, even though when a person sees something beautiful, they might see a beautiful scene where they would say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Ma'aseh Bereishis. They might admire Hashem's creation. They might make a bracha to Hashem. Wow, what a beautiful thing you created. So it's a religious experience, right? But it's still, you can't interrupt the learning. Why not? What's the difference? The difference is because in one, you are admiring the handiwork of Hashem. When you're learning, you're engaging with Hashem himself. You know, it's like, you know, it gives an example, fellows going through the Smithsonian Institute, you know, the Renwick Gallery of Art. and they stop at this painting and they look at it and they see the subtlety and the nuance in the painting, and they say, boy, you know, look, this artist, he must have had such insight, such sensitivity, how he picked up on everything, and look at the expressions on the faces. You can't just do that by copying off of a photograph. You know, the person really has such a deep understanding of human nature. And he's talking to the person, you know, next to him out loud, and then the third person says, I appreciate it very much. I'm the painter. I says, excuse me, don't interrupt me. The painting is, right? It's ridiculous. You know, you're describing how insightful and sensitive and fine the person is, right? The one who created it is. And then you have a chance to meet them. So forget the painting. Forget the painting. Right? Talk to the person. Meet the person. Gain something from the person himself. You're going to spend time with the painting rather than with the painter. That's Pesach Mishnasai. And that's the difference between learning about the world and learning about Hashem. Torah is learning about Hashem. Torah is Hashem's word applied to the world. So yes, of course, it's applied to the world. So it can be discussing some pretty mundane things. Hashem's word gets into everything. Just like, you know, we say, you know, Hashem sits and concerns himself with the seed of the Jewish people. Nothing, right? Nothing is too small for Hashem to get into, but it's Hashem's word applied to that reality. And that's so much more of a direct dveikus v'Hashem, given the premise that the value of wisdom is not wisdom itself, but the value of wisdom is to the extent that it creates that attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So a wisdom which is Hashem's wisdom, when we have that, that of course creates the ultimate attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, rather than the wisdom within something that Hashem himself created. Now, Kutsha Brichu V'Yerai Sachad, we've talked about this before, is really the ongoing theme of the Tiferes Yisrael as outlined in the Hakdama, is this ability to connect to Hashem, like we say, you know, the Jewish people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Torah are one. Through the Torah, the Jewish people are able to unify with Hashem through incorporating into themselves Hashem's way, Das Elokim, the wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's how it brings it together.
Actually, just a minor question. Something you said about Adam Rishon. Did the schism, as you put it?